There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1206 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the next couple of hours and lots to do on today's show. Coming up in hour number two, my friend and historian extraordinaire John Sledge joins us. We'll talk about August 30th, 207 years ago in the Fort Mims Massacre. More of our local history in the Creek Indian War coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Also coming up later this hour, we'll start talking about relief efforts. Robbie Stockton from the Mobile JCs is going to join me, talk about some relief efforts. You had a real emotional reaction last night to what I was seeing of the with the landfall of Hurricane Laura, and I started talking about how we could already get ready to help over there, those folks in Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas, and the Mobile JCs are working on it right now, so we'll find out their plans coming up later this hour. Plus, my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. joins me here in just about 10 minutes, but the leadoff batter, our staff meteorologist, tropical weather expert, Dr. Bill Williams, joins us now. Dr. Bill, that was a very strong hurricane that hit the Louisiana coast.
Yeah, those images just before the landfall just were incredible. And we talk about it as a textbook picture of, yeah, of a major hurricane. But it did make landfall about 1 o'clock in the morning. And the last reconnaissance flight determined peak winds about 150 miles per hour. So it was a high Category 4 hurricane. It's now located, heading in toward the northwest corner now of Louisiana. And it shortly will be downgraded to a tropical storm. And still a huge circulation, and it will continue on up into across Arkansas, mainly tomorrow, and then turn to the east. And at the end of the day on Friday, it'll be over Kentucky. And then on Saturday, it'll cross the mid-Atlantic states, and it'll just basically be a depression. And then after that, on Sunday, it'll be near Nova Scotia. And then after that, it will cross Newfoundland and then continue on up into the North Atlantic.
Holy cow.
So no longer is a tropical system.
But it's gonna make its way, you know, from the Gulf of Mexico as it has, through the United States, a big section of it, and then back into the Atlantic.
That's right. And when it finally passes Newfoundland, it'll be most likely approaching Greenland.
Wow.
But it's a long track, but it'll lose its tropical characteristics by the time it gets into Kentucky. And after that, it more or less becomes a mid-latitude type system. But it'll be a big rain producer for many states before it gets out over the open waters of the Atlantic.
What about for our state, our neck of the woods? What's the rainfall forecast from this?
Well, right now, we're looking at just some scattered thunderstorms and showers this afternoon. But we haven't been outside. It is very, very humid. And that's not going to end for a while because we're going to see another surge of moisture come in as the storm moves on up through Arkansas and then across to Kentucky. We'll continue to get a lot of tropical moisture just surging northward and covering Alabama, Mississippi, northwest Florida. We'll stay with us through the weekend. And that air is unstable, meaning that we will see scattered showers and thunderstorms develop for tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday. Most of those will be in the afternoon, but don't be surprised if a shower or hear some thunder at night. It's just a very, very unstable and humid air mass. The heat index today is up around, should reach about 105 to 107, and we'll see those figures over the weekend.
Now, we'll be, so the it'll be unsettled and moist air developing thunderstorms. It's not going to be bands of rain truly coming from the storm?
It'll just be scattered showers and thunderstorms that will develop. And it could be in the afternoon. They could be rather numerous. And by the way, in respect to the hurricane, we're just starting to get some damage reports. But there was a measurement of a peak wind of 134 miles per hour at gust in, of all places, up in Lake Charles. It's very possible that that reading didn't actually measure the highest wind, because it probably got offline or was damaged after that. And that was the peak wind. The National Weather Service radar at Lake Charles was destroyed. That huge radar apparently collapsed. It's out of commission right now. And so there's a gap there in the coverage of any future storms there over that part of the country.
Oh, wow. You know, you've talked about that before when you go, well, our peak winds were this before you had a failing, right? A destruction,
exactly.
Something. We've talked about it here. So one, you said 134 in Lake Charles?
134, and then, that's some 20 or more miles away from the coast. There was a measurement in Cameron of 127, but I wouldn't be surprised that the higher totals there could be found along the coast if we had some of the gauges available. But at least there was a 127 reported there at Cameron, Louisiana.
Let's talk about the other part of this that you and I focused on a bunch, and that is the storm surge. Are you seeing any stat? Because there were predictions between, 15 and 20 feet. Is there anything coming in showing, what it actually was or how far inland it got?
I haven't seen anything yet. We will probably get some indication of that in the next 24 to 48 hours when a little survey is done to determine the height. But I wouldn't be surprised if the peak was somewhere between 15 and 20, if not possibly 20.
And for people who haven't been in that part of the world, 15 feet takes you a long way inland. I mean, that's miles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure did. And very flat all the way up to Interstate 10. And so flooding occurred all the way up to the interstate area because it's just no more than about a foot or so above sea level. And so that's a tough area for a hurricane to come into because it's so flat. But this was an interesting storm that'll be studied for a long time at a long track. And just remember that this was a disorganized system coming across Cuba and got us act together and had to go across some waters that were sort of disturbed by Marco and went across that area and then out into the undisturbed waters of the Western Gulf, which were very, very warm, and that's where everything came together, and the upper atmosphere was had very little wind shear, and the storm virtually just exploded and intensified in a short period of time.
Yeah, you called that way back, and you said, well, watch this, because the shearing that was present for Marco, don't think that's going to be the situation for Laura, and it wasn't there. And then we got that textbook image. It was just second to that image of Katrina when it took up the entire Gulf. That one of Laura last night is sticking with me, Dr. Bill.
Yeah, that was an amazing sight, and if you looked at the loop, you could so easily see the circulation of clouds coming in, a thunderstorm circulating in counterclockwise into the storm center. And then you could see clouds going out of the storm, spiraling out in the opposite direction. And in the upper atmosphere, they go out in a clockwise rotation. And if you watch that loop very carefully, you could see the two motions occurring in the low level and in the upper level of the storm.
Is this going, silly question here, just setting you up, is this Laura going to be, Jersey retired for the name Laura, is this going to be one of note?
That will be retired, no question about it.
I think it was maybe coverage from Weather Channel last night or early this morning, it all kind of blends together. They were saying that it was a Category 4 you know, on landfall is pretty rare in the list. I mean, I was thinking about fives like Andrew. I was thinking about others. But how, I mean, four hitting? I mean, is that a completely rare thing?
Well, that's going to be, we'll find out. It's very destructive. And that'll put it, that'll put it in the books and retire that name for sure. One thing for sure, and that is Marco will not be retired.
Right, that's true. I dare ask you here before we wrap up for this segment. Anything else you're looking at in the tropics, Dr. Bill? I cringe when I say that, but anything else?
Now there is a tropical wave coming off the African coast, and it is projected to move steadily to the west toward the Caribbean. Conditions are not favorable for any kind of growth or intensification right now, but once it gets a little closer to the Caribbean in a few days, then the conditions may be favorable then for it to organize. So we'll be watching that for quite a few days.
All right, Dr. Bell, we appreciate the update, and we will check back with you soon.
Okay, Sean.
There he is, our staff meteorologist and a tropical weather expert. Guy, you want as part of your team during hurricane season and the rest of the year as well. Right, more updates coming up throughout the day. And, of course, you always hear Dr. Bill twice a morning show live with Dan and Dalton for Mobile Mornings. Robert Kennedy Jr. joins me next right here on Midday Mobile.
This information update brought to you by Forklift Hunter, specializing in forklift repair, maintenance, parts, and sales. If you're not a current Forklift Hunter customer, give us a shot. Once you see the savings, you'll never go back to the dealers. Visit ForkliftHunter.com or call 479-2270.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. And my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. Now, Robert and I usually would talk in the past in the 8 o'clock hour, but I got booted from that. I didn't get booted. By the way, too, I appreciate all the messages from folks on the call all phones here and email and stuff. I'm good to go. It was actually my decision to bring Dan Brennan into the mix, and so I appreciate that. But y'all, I'm still here, not going anywhere, just not going to be here at 4:30 in the morning. I get in about 7:30. So
congratulations on that.
Yeah, that's it's a big move here. I've for my kids don't know what to do. I'm taking them to school. They the first day, we didn't tell them, by the way, Monday. Yeah. We didn't tell them, just surprised them, and it was, they were already not getting up for my wife and all
of
that
course,
stuff,
of
and
course.
Then I rolled into the room.
And
I used
sir.
Yeah, well, I used a very mature way to get them up. The steamroller, where I get, like, yep. Put my arms together, and then mm-hmm. I steamroll them in the bed.
Exactly.
They love that. But, no, yeah, so I am here. So we're going to be talking on Thursdays, just Thursdays, during the midday show. And, man, I was thinking about you during our conversation with Dr. Bill Williams, because I know you spent time in Lake Charles. You've
yes.
talked about this. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time down there in southwest Louisiana. That's what I was saying when I looked at that storm surge prediction. I said, my God, those poor people.
Yeah. First of all, I ask everybody to continue to keep that community in your thoughts and prayers.
Yes.
As I mentioned to you before, I was living down there in 2005.
Wida.
We had the double whammy. So there was Katrina first. And during Katrina, I was part of the team that was actually running the evacuation center. That was there at the Lake Charles Civic Center.
Y'all were taking in people from the east at that point.
That's correct.
Yeah.
People who were leaving, not able to find a place in Baton Rouge and not going quite as far as Houston. And then literally, you know, just a month later, Hurricane Rita came right up the Sabine Pass. I was in the casino industry at the time, and literally it destroyed the casino that I was at. And that's what.
And they don't build those flimsy, Robert. I mean,
well, it was actually the riverboats.
Oh, on water ones.
And then it was, you know, the barges that yeah. actually sit on the water, because that was a requirement
right.
for the gaming operations actually to be in water. And literally that storm surge comes in there, that starts slamming hard aground, and then it simply became a business decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you spend money actually trying to renovate it, or do you just kind of close up shop? So
that area down there too, that, you know, south of I-10.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to see, I've seen some pictures already, is going to be heartbreaking, but not shocking to me. But like Dr. Bill said, it was 134 in Lake Charles before the gauge broke.
Yes. Yes. That
For people who haven't been down there, Lake Charles is not on the Gulf.
Right.
It's inland, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's significant.
Absolutely. Well, but we'll continue to keep everybody in prayer. I only heard on the news so far of, I think there was only one death from a person who, a child who was... a tree came through the house type of situation, so...
You know, it's something we talked about last week with Bill Finch, from Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast, about the trees around your house. It says, like, the majority of the insurance claims on storms, except, I guess, right on the coast where you get storm surge, are trees... through houses.
I remember we actually came to Mobile full-time in the early 1980s, the year after Hurricane Katrina hit. And when we built...
After Frederick.
Frederick, 80, yeah. Thank you. The year after Frederick hit. And
for guys our age, Frederick's like a benchmark.
It was a huge deal. And I just remember when we're living in a house that my parents built from the ground up. And I remember the one thing my mom wanted to do was to cut all the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to look at the house, there are no trees that are in falling distance of the actual structure just to avoid
smart
that sort
woman.
Of thing.
Yep. Smart woman. All right. I want to talk a couple things here. Conventions with you. We hadn't had a chance to talk since the conclusion of the Democrat convention and the start of the Republican convention.
Yes.
So a lot of comparisons being made out there between the two.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about the... And it depends. Yeah, you get punditry on either side. Said,
of course.
This one's the best and this one's the best. I will say, just from... a pragmatic production value.
Okay.
Is it fair, in your opinion, I think I'm right, but that the production value of the RNC is RNC better?
As a person who
the
would
show.
Be looking at it as a non-biased observer, without question, the production value of the RNC conference actually comes across at a higher level than what we would have seen at the DNC conference. I'm not talking about the substance, just the production value itself.
Yeah, we'll get in the substance and say, and I think I need to say this too, I didn't think about it, folks that are just Midday Mobile listeners. So Robert and I have, we agree on some percentage of things and we disagree. Mm-hmm. Robert, a Democrat, I'm some wayward conservative that doesn't carry any card
you
for any party.
You claim to be a libertarian, but...
Yes, a pragmatic libertarian as I get older. But yeah, so the messaging then. So there's production value. So let's get past that. We'll go in the messaging. And is it fair when... What's your reaction when conservatives say, well, the DNC, their convention was nothing but how bad President Trump is and not a lot about how we're going to make things better?
Well, I think... the evaluation, if you're sitting in a Republican chair, is fair, but it's the same thing that comes up when we have any one of a number of these conversations. It's like, what is it that you expect them to say?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to come out and acknowledge that the issues of the day, whether it ends up being coronavirus, whether it ends up being some of the interracial relations, particularly with communities of color relative to the police, they're not expecting that the Republicans in their analysis are going to give thumbs up to the Democrats for actually putting that message in the message base. They're just not going to do that, right? And so I always think it's just a little bit comical to hear the Republican analysts saying it was all doom and gloom from the Democratic side,
right?
When essentially during the RNC portion of the convention, they're saying, oh my God, if you allow Democrats to take over the Oval Office, then it's all doom and gloom, you know, on this crazy path towards a totalitarian society, right? So they're literally doing the same thing when they're analyzing each other's conventions.
So you gotta wade through that on both sides.
The one other thing, though, that I did want to add, and I found this particularly interesting on two separate dimensions. The first one, you said the first layer of substance in terms of the messaging and what the RNC was trying to put out in terms of just kind of the positive, upbeat aspects before you get into Looney Tunes about socialism and stuff like that.
Well,
it was very disciplined in terms of the way that it came across. And so if it was a truly independent, casual observer that didn't have any understanding of what was happening outside of the conference, it did come across in terms of accomplishing what they were trying to accomplish.
My one critique about it, but I am very cynical, is the over-the-top.
Not you.
Is the over-the-top, and I'm going to critique the RNC for some degree here, that it was over-the-top. I'm the burqa guy. I want everybody in burqas. The over-the-top, well, here's a brown person, here's a person who's from another country, look at these people that are involved. And I'm not talking about elected officials, I'm talking about, I got my discussion there. But hey, look at these people. Herschel Walker to some degree. I find Senator Scott in a different. We'll talk about him separately.
Completely.
But Herschel, but also people that are foreign that are becoming U.S. citizens, which I think is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. But it seems like maybe too much part of the show. Maybe my cynicism's there. Maybe that, you know, people need to know that message that when done the right way. I can't speak for every person, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of conservatives out there that say when done the right way and legally, we're a nation of immigrants. Come on in.
Well, it depends on who the audience is mm-hmm. for that message and what it is you're trying to communicate, right? And so I think when you talk about the concentration of diversity that was in the mm-hmm. RNC, that what I saw during the convention nights that I watched from beginning to end, mm-hmm. Tuesday night I didn't watch quite as diligently as I did on Monday and Wednesday, it over-indexed, right? So mm-hmm. I would have seen a higher concentration in prime time than I would when I've gone to any one of a number of Republican events locally.
Right.
And so that actually continues to feed the cynicism say that it's more about the image not necessarily about the voice.
But and we're 14 seconds here until the news, but I mean, when we come back, doesn't that set a standard that maybe will be reflected at local events all over the country? We'll talk about that when we return.
All right.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Thursday edition of Midday Mobile. My buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. And we're going to be doing this during the midday show now on Thursdays, abandoning those fools on the morning show.
At least for the time being.
That's right. I know I got a couple more things on the stack, but you and I were having a conversation during the news break that is probably the most valuable, I think, to have this. And for people who haven't heard us do the declaration before, which Robert knows it makes me roll my eyes, but I guess it's important in today's discourse. So I'm a white guy and Robert's a black guy. There you go. All right. So you understand, because that's important to some people to mm-hmm. frame conversations. So
the context of this conversation.
You know me. We're all getting in burkas. I'm over mm-hmm. it. So we've got Senator Scott.
Yep.
Speaks the other night. And so we're watching Twitter. My wife and I are watching Twitter. And the things hurled, he hadn't even finished talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the things he was called on there, the Uncle Tom and all that stuff.
Yep.
It made me so angry. And it made me so angry because I believe in being judged on the individual level.
Right.
And that was not good. Now it's Twitter. Twitter's a media neighborhood, and Twitter's mm-hmm. not regular people sometimes. But that feeling that if he stands up to talk about why he's a Republican and his life story, and so that makes him an Uncle Tom. That frustrates me.
I don't think that was really what was setting people off. We can actually drill down that in just a second, but let me just frame this conversation for just a bit. So you and I often talk when we delve into issues of race to say, neither one of us speak for everybody, right? I don't speak for all black people. You don't speak for all white people, et cetera, et cetera. And so part of what creates the cynicism within the African-American community on the Democratic side is when somebody white will hold up a single example
mm-hmm.
and somehow suggest that because that single example stated a point of view, that's reflective of everyone else's experience.
That frustration makes sense to me.
So when you look at the speech that he gave on face all the way up until the point that he got to the, you know, socialist utopia and kind of totalitarianism that would happen after that, fascism, et cetera, et cetera. But everything that he said up to that point was really very well communicated from his perspective, particularly that aspect of the story, which talks about the wonderful part of our country, which is where we could be at the time that his grandfather was actually coming of age when he was a sharecropper, and then the set of circumstances that allowed him to find a mentor who was willing to give him some extra encouragement when he was at a low point, I think around the freshman year in mm-hmm. high school, and then to actually see him push through that, make it to Congress, and ultimately to the Senate. That story is the quintessential American dream.
It is, for no matter what you look like.
No matter what you look like.
I agree.
But there's the corollary to it, and this is what ends up fueling the cynicism. A lot of times, folks will look at one individual who has been successful and say, because that one individual has been successful, that means there aren't any problems whatsoever. So in his life experience, when he gives the example of him individually wearing his U.S. Senate badge and being stopped seven, eight, nine times by the folks there, it reinforces the story that's also being told by African Americans in the Democratic Party as well.
And, right? And I think he is telling, and I think what a message, because he's doing exactly what you said. There's we still have issues we have to work on, but look, this is a fantastic country with those warts. What a fantastic country we have.
Right, but the thing is, if he looks at the wart and says in his experience the wart actually healed over time, there's always somebody else who may have been in that same situation who didn't have that mentor who is telling them to do something different, right? And so here's one of the examples that I like using from my own life. So I often tell the story of being at Scarborough Middle School and wanting to run for class president my eighth grade year in high school.
So it started early with you.
It started early with me, right? And at the time, we had a position in the student council that was black representative. So that was literally an actual position. And
y'all can't see this. I'm wincing.
Yeah, and I had the director of the student council, whoever the teacher was, who told me that it wasn't appropriate for me to run for class president, that it would be more appropriate for me to run for black representative. Now, I can't say on air the conversation that I had with my father when I told him that was the case.
I imagine what that was like.
But subsequent to that, freshman year in high school and all throughout, I only ran for president. I didn't ever run for anything other than that. My point being is there may not have been a racist bone in that teacher's heart. And she may have been thinking about it in terms of presenting, you know, and filling positions on the student council to make sure no positions went empty. But when you think about the impact that has when a young person hears that, right?
Sure.
And it's just fortunate that I was in a family structure where someone was like, you don't let anybody do that to you, right? So both realities can be true. From one perspective, it's positive. From another perspective, it can end up being negative.
And it's, you know, to I think bringing down those barriers is important. Also, not everybody can have great parents. You and I have been lucky to have great parents, but you incumbent upon all parents to try to be the best you can be and tell that child that, you know, to push through and to do it again. And I think as time has moved on, we have made improvements in this country decade after decade.
I actually had this conversation with one of my closest friends, probably not too long ago, and he was asking that question, is it better? Right? And so I responded to him, and I really was not trying to be coy. I kept asking him, better for who?
For whom? Yeah, sure.
And that's the part that we have to continue to drill down on.
Or bad, why? That's my other part of it. So if somebody you want to say, well, I didn't get to be where that other person. Mm-hmm. I'm jealous of that other person. But why? Is it because if it's something that how God made you, then we have to fix that in this country. If it's, hey, I need to have the same outcome as somebody else, this is a country where that doesn't happen for, you know, people of every skin color.
Right, but pull that to its logical conclusion. So if everything was equal the way it was supposed to be now, you would see a normal distribution pretty much across the board, right? But when you talk about, you know, kind of where we are career-wise, we still had to have 30 years almost of work experience to get to this point, right? No matter what anybody did, right? We're going to be in a different place as we approach 50 than we were when we were approaching 20.
That's right.
And so that's the thing I always ask people to keep in mind, that even using that Tim Scott scenario about where his grandfather was compared to where he is now, there are lots of folks along the way who were helping him. But just like some folks are pushing him forward, there are lots of folks who may have been holding other people back. And that's the reason with this particular conversation, I continue to believe it's not solved in years, it's solved in generations. And we have the responsibility to acknowledge where we are today while we continue to try to push forward.
So let's go back to what set this off too is you talk about the percentage of people of color that were involved in the RNC, which I applaud and makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
But you said that is not reflected, at least here at a local level, for number of folks that are black folks that are Republicans don't show up at the local meetings or something like that.
That's correct.
You'd have to, I guess, get a survey of these people, but what could make that be reflected at the national level the same way at the local level? To me, it's maybe the response that Senator Scott gets, being called out and called names for being part of that, maybe somebody locally who is a Republican and is a black person says, I don't want to hear that, you know, I'm going to keep it quiet. I'm just going to vote that way. I mean, there's a, you know, is that part of it, do you think, for folks?
To a certain extent, sure, right? Because when I often talk about how folks send somebody to me and they're like, well, you know what? You would have a lot better chance politically if you became a Republican because I agree with 92% of what you're saying. And then my response always ends up being, well, if you agree with 92% of what I'm saying, you could actually support me now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are social implications to political affiliations, particularly here in the state of Alabama, right? When you look at the number of elected white members of either the state or federal delegation, I think is it a total of 3 people, right? So at least here in Alabama, to a certain extent, race and party kind of align a little
bit. It's frustrating to me.
I think that it's the responsibility. So even from a Democratic perspective, as a Democrat, we have a responsibility to try to recruit white males,
mm-hmm.
just as much as the Republican Party has a responsibility to attempt to recruit more people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not doing it proactively, just based upon the demographics of how people live, there's no opportunity for it to occur naturally.
All right. As we wrap up, I've got tons of text in here, but this is, I think, one of the best. So Supermom asked this important question. I was thinking the same thing. So did you win class president?
Freshman year, sophomore year, yes. Junior year, no. And then senior year, I was student council president, and I was also class president of the Naval Academy.
So
I went on a run after that.
Yeah, he had said, get out of my way. Watch me. As always.
Lessons learned. Lessons learned.
As always. I love our conversations, and we'll be doing it on Thursdays here in Midday Mobile. It's my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. And, yeah, we'll get more next week. And people have questions. Can they email you?
Sure. You can email me at my initials, RKJ, at Kennedy, the number 4, Alabama.org.
All right. Very good. All right. Have a great weekend.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Coming right back, we're going to talk about what you can do. I had this emotional reaction last night, so we need to be getting supplies ready and help the folks in Louisiana and Texas before the storm even hits. Robbie Stockton from the Mobile JCs is giving us what they're doing, their plan to help out those folks in Louisiana and Texas. He joins us next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, coming up in just about 15 minutes, my friend, historian extraordinaire, John Sledge joins us. Talking about what comes up this weekend, 207 years since the Fort Mims massacre. A lot of us have been to Fort Mims there in Baldwin County, maybe studied it in the old day. My kids have a new book. Their new used to be called No Alabama. Remember that? I'm 48. Remember No Alabama? It was kind of like a mustard yellow cover to that. They've renamed it now. Same kind of thing, but. Maybe you learned about the Creek Indian War and the Fort Mims Massacre. Well, you didn't learn it like this. We'll bring in the man that can teach us a lot more about that history coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Also want to say congratulations. We have yet another winner in our FM Talk 106.5 Sportsman's Marine Fish and Photo Contest. Buddy Garrett has won this week. That means Buddy wins that very swank FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Team Dry Fit shirt with the speckled trout and the redfish on there, the FM Talk 106.5 logo. And that means we shake the Etch-A-Sketch in another week. Our weeks are Thursday to Thursday on the Fishing Photo Contest. So another week, and you can get the fresh set of photos in there. The photos that get the most number of likes win a shirt each week. All right, brought to you by Sportsman's Marine. It's the FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Photo Contest. I mentioned before we went to the break, be joined by Robbie Stockton with the Mobile JCs. And just an emotional reaction I had last night looking what those folks in Southwest Louisiana and Southeast Texas were fixing to deal with. And I was wondering, you know, what we could do to help. And then I hear from, no big surprise, the JCs that are always helping out, that they're thinking about it themselves. Robbie's joining us now. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. I appreciate you having me on the show today.
And so y'all obviously, JCs, y'all are having the conversation too, what you could do to help. Kind of, do you work with other JCs in other parts of, like, do you go to Louisiana, their JCs, or how does that work?
Yeah, so right now, kind of our general plan, which is still very fluid, but we're going to coordinate with the state chapter in Louisiana, and I've been in contact with their state president, and we're going to coordinate with chapters locally there in Louisiana as far as delivering supplies that we collect here in Mobile.
Okay, so what I like about it when I hear a group like y'all doing it is we have a, not saying the federal response is a great thing and all that, but we have a better sense of what people need.
For sure, and that's kind of the idea behind connecting with the local people there. You know, they can tell us specifically, you know, what they need and where to go. And, of course, they're part of the local community, so they can help distribute better than we could, just showing up with a truck full of items and not really knowing what to do.
Okay, so when this is, you know, I know you said it's fluid, but when the concrete starts to dry on this a little bit, how can we help out? Us, you know, non-JCs that want to help out. Will there be a way for us to be able to help this effort?
Absolutely. So right now, our plan is to begin collecting donations at the ground Monday. And we're generally planning on collecting donations all week, and then we'll load it on a truck. And as soon as we get a pinpoint location of where we're going to go, we'll take it into Louisiana and coordinate with the local JCs there. But right now, it looks like we're going to be collecting at the grounds Monday through Friday at least, and then loading the truck and heading out possibly next weekend. Of course, it just depends on what they're telling us there on the ground as far as being able to get in and not be more of a burden than a help.
Sure. And I know they may have it open back up, but even right now, I guess, have a lot of roads closed. They had I-10 closed for a while. I don't know if it's open back up or not. So, yeah, that's going to be part of it getting in there. And I take a second here, too, to talk about what y'all do, because I talk about this come rodeo time. Of course, we have the fair coming up, but the JCs, y'all are, so people understand, this is volunteer. Y'all do this. This is what y'all do year round, but you didn't get paid for it, and you're a charity.
That's correct. The JCs are 100% volunteers. Everything that we just do in our spare time. You mentioned the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and then we have the Greater Gulf State Fair coming up, and also the Isaiah Pro Mates. They all fall under the umbrella of the JCs in Mobile. Those are what we call our three major projects. We have other things that we do throughout the year. We have the Mobile JCs Christmas shopping tour that we do at Christmas. We also have a project that we call the Stone Soup Project, which we cook Christmas meals and deliver on Christmas Eve morning. But the three main ones are the Fishing Rodeo, the Greater Gulf State Fair, and his Ed Tromage.
And that through that process, through that charity effort from y'all, you have ways to help out, you know, whether it is Christmas time or it is the Sea Lab or, in this case, folks to our west down I-10. All right, so I know you'll reach out to me and give me an update when you're ready, but if people want to look online or something, is there going to be a place to go? Will it be on your Facebook page, or where will you put more info?
Yeah, so we'll be posting most of the information on our Facebook page, which is just Mobile JC. You can find us there. You can call our office if you like. And the other major projects, the rodeo, the fair, and the trail, they will also be posting things on their Facebook page, keeping everybody as up to date as possible with what we have going on.
You're talking about proactive. There it is. Robbie Stockton with the Mobile JC is already working on this. Thanks for your time, and I have a feeling we'll be talking again real soon.
Absolutely, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Hey, we appreciate y'all too, Robbie. What a great bunch of folks. A great bunch of folks. That's why back when I talked about doing the rodeo, and I said, hey, even if you know, you're like, oh, I can't snap or buy a ticket, because that money stays right here at great charities, and these folks volunteer. They work very hard at doing all this, and it made my heart happy when I saw that last night on Twitter that they were already talking about the same thing at the Mobile JCs. Let me also say that we'll work to promote any kind of efforts that are local to local here. And it may be even national, but I'm always, if you are a group here, it's your church, it's a school group, whatever, that's putting together supplies to take, because we haven't even seen, There's some drone footage, and some people have been sending me pictures here and there, and it's, oh my gosh, just, I'm talking about even in the area, right now I'm getting the pictures, you know, south of I-10. We'll get pictures from the tornadoes and straight line winds up through Louisiana, but I'm talking about that area from I-10 south, that Holly Beach, that Cameron, that Jennings right there on I-10, White Lake, Lacassine, all those places down there, they're just barely a few feet above sea level, and here comes, let alone the wind, a story and a half worth of storm surge at those folks. They're going to be devastated. And we know what that's about here, and we also know how to help out as a community. So as your group gets together and is putting together supplies and taking in, you need help getting people to donate supplies or donate money or more information about that, we're here. Local radio station, we want to help out local folks in Louisiana, help folks here do that. So we've done that from the time of Katrina, you know, on through. So it's something we do. So, by the way, phone number, text line here is 343-0106, 343-0106. You can always reach us on that. And or if you want to send a good old-fashioned email, you can do that as well. It's Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. All right, a lot of emails here with our conversation with Robert Kennedy Jr., and it may be brand new, this segment for y'all. If you're just a Midday Mobile listener and you hadn't been a 8 o'clock hour Mobile Mornings listener in the past, yeah, it was new. So Robert and I have been talking for a couple years, and you know, he ran against Doug Jones in the for the Senate seat. He is a he's a obviously a guy that is politically ambitious, from it sounds like, from eighth grade on. But he's Naval Academy graduate, two tours with the Navy, and one of our friends and somebody that I enjoy the debate with. And a lot of folks are asking questions about him. Listen, you're going to hear him a lot more. And I think somebody was asking about the email. It's, if I remember off the top of my head, I can go to my Outlook Express, but it's his initial. So it's RKJ at KennedyNumber4Alabama.org. Now, I don't know how you got the .org thing. That's pretty cool. But if you want to send him an email. And if you have a subject you'd like to hear us talk about in future shows, you can always send that to the text line or email as well. All right. Congratulations once again, Buddy Garrett, our winner this week in the FM Talk 106.5 Fish and Photo Contest brought to you by Sportsman's Marine. He wins that super good-looking FM Talk 106.5 Fish and Team Dry Fit shirt. So good work, buddy. And a new week starts. You could be next week's winner. Get on it. All right. John Sledge. We're talking Fort Mims next.